Easy Shoppen mit PayPal. Geht jetzt auch im Laden. Ob Späti oder Club, mit PayPal bezahlst du auch im Real Life einfach und sicher. Und in Restaurants und Bars gibt's sogar noch 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tipp dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America.
Mr. President.
This has been the President of the United States of America. May God have mercy on our souls. Stu Does America.
Head over to StuDoesTheMerch.com. Use the promo code STU10 to save 10%. If you're watching on YouTube, like the video right now. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for notifications. Do all the things. Ezra Levant is here to remind us that America may be falling apart, but at least we're not Canada. CNN has invented a whole new form of racism for us all to get pissed off at. But we start by doing the American healthcare system. And let me start with this. This week has sucked. It has not been fun at all. I've had a crappy week. It was my first day in this week. And the whole week has just been miserable. It started with my dog dying. That's how the week started. President Miles. Yes, those dates are accurate. 2004 to 2023. Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem possible. In fact, his name was really just Miles. We didn't start calling him President Miles until he was like 16 or 17. And the joke was that he's still at 17 years old, blind, deaf, really didn't get around all that well, still in better shape than our actual president. So we started calling him President Miles. And unfortunately, he did pass away. Luckily, though, you know, peacefully in his sleep after, I mean, he had his 18th birthday in December. So, I mean, he was born in the first term of the George W. Bush administration. So he had a good freaking life, an awesome, awesome dog. And I miss him terribly. And I don't want to think about it anymore. So many of you have reached out, and I do really appreciate it. With nice messages. Janice Dean of Fox News Channel said, I'm so sorry for your loss. What a sweet face. And I don't know if she's talking about Miles or she's talking about me. I mean, they're both true. So I don't know. We'll have to figure that out later. So sorry, Stu. We lost a doggy this week in our family, too. Sending love to you all. It's the worst, man. There's just nothing. Ugh. That can be the absolute worst day of your life. We've been through it all and it never gets easier. President Miles, what a beautiful creature. Take care, Stu. I'm sure you realize this causes lots of tears. You were lucky to have him, says Sandy. Thank you so much, Sandy. Lenek, friend of Glenn Beck, says, oh my goodness, I bet he wouldn't have beaten Joe. I bet he would have beaten Joe and had everyone and their dog vote for him, at least 90 million votes. It's true. Miles was a voter, by the way, did vote several times. And he will continue to vote for Democrats after he's dead, apparently. Carrie writes, so sorry for your loss. Pets and their our family and they are lost. Takes a piece of our hearts when they leave us. So true. Sarah, I'm so sorry. I love how much he meant to your family. He was really loved and had an amazing life. Our own Hillary Kennedy wrote a nice message. Praying for you and the fam. Miles was an icon. He will be remembered fondly. We miss you at work, and we hope Lisa is doing great. And that's the other part of this really week that went on, is my wife had a relatively major surgery on Tuesday. So we had that was already scheduled on Tuesday. And then on Monday, the dog, and it's just been terrible. So I do appreciate all of you reaching out. But I wanted to take a minute to talk about how all this happened, because I think it relates to our lives and our country and the way we do things, particularly in our healthcare system. First of all, I can't say enough about my wife's experience at the hospital here in Texas and the way this has all gone down. It's been incredible. You know, great doctors, great nurses. You know, I think because of all the COVID stuff that's been so weird and strange, we kind of have, I think, developed a understandable sort of like hesitancy with the medical field lately because, you know, the public health apparatus is different than the healthcare industry. And so many people in the healthcare industry are awesome. They do a great job. And like they really, I mean, we all want them there for us when things go wrong. And, you know, when you combine the, you know, the Anthony Fauci's on down and you see the public side of this get involved, meaning public, meaning government side of this, it starts to ruin it a little bit, frankly. And we can get to a point where we get so skeptical about every doctor that comes on TV that we wind up missing out in, you know, in real help, you know, life-saving treatments, for example. We don't want to go there, of course. We don't want to be the anti-medicine side of politics. On the other hand, we do want to be the anti-government involvement in our medicine side of politics, because that just does not work out all that well. And, you know, one thing going through this process and just seeing how incredible the technology we have is today and how fast this has moved, it's important to understand that, like, the future of healthcare is not far away. We are in a period where this stuff has been improving dramatically for a long time. You look back at even when I was, you know, in high school or whatever, go back 20, God, that's 30 years now. And you look at that and you say, wow, that is a totally, these survival rates for these diseases are totally different. Our detection of these diseases is totally worse. We were not able to do the things that we do today. And I want to tell you kind of just a quick little bit about how this situation happened with my wife. She is super healthy, way healthier than I am. You know, everyone tells me, you know, tell me maybe a little bit too frequently how I shouldn't be married to her. And she's way above my, you know, league. And I get that and I agree with it. I don't necessarily need to be told it on a daily basis by strangers in the street. I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily part of the prescription for this particular thing. But I do agree. She's in great shape, has no health problems. She's never sick, never anything going on. And one of the things that we started doing years and years ago was going to a place called the Princeton Longevity Center. And this is just something that I found to be interesting. And I thought, seems like to me, the future of healthcare. And I think they actually call it, they say something like that on their website, the future of preventative medicine. Here's the thing. We're really good at figuring out how to cure big diseases, how to cure big ailments. We actually know how to do a lot of it. We talk about the cure for cancer, and that's really, really difficult to suss out what that is. Obviously, we've made incredible strides on that. And I know you can have, I think it's a fiber one cereal. You eat enough of that, you're going to be totally cured. I know you don't have to send me all your what you should eat to avoid cancer stuff. I got it. But what I find interesting about that is if you catch this stuff early, very little of it makes a big difference. Like, you can cure it, you can knock it out, you can, you know, remove it. You can do something about a lot of this stuff if you catch it early enough. So years and years ago, I got freaked out by that. And I thought to myself, what happens when you actually, like, when someone gets, like, say, cancer or heart disease, how does that happen? Usually, like heart disease, you have a heart attack and they're like, hey, you just had a heart attack, we better do some heart surgery. Or, hey, you're having heart pain, let's look at your heart. Holy crap, we better do heart surgery immediately. Same thing with cancer. Ah, I'm having pain in this weird area. I don't know what it is. It's been going on for a while now. What's going on? Hey, let's take a couple scans. Holy crap, this could be cancer. Oh my God, it's cancer. We better do something about it. Oh no, it's too late. That's sort of the process of how this goes. And what Princeton Longevity Center, and there's a couple other places that do this around the country, does is they bring you in for like a full day physical. And they you do a lot of these tests that you would do if you felt the pain, you just do it beforehand, right? Like, you go in and you take a full body scan, not after you felt pain and they say, oh my God, this could be cancer, we better check it. Instead, you do it before that, when you're not feeling anything at all and you're feeling totally fine. And the idea is to catch it early. Now, the downside to this is it's quite expensive right now, and that's going to be part of the solution, is getting it under control. But, like, if this was something you could do, you do it like every 5 to 7 years, you go in and you have this thing and they look through all the stuff. They have a 3D picture of your heart. They look advanced scans of all of your organs. They look at everything. They know you better than you want to know yourself. And the point of it is to catch this stuff in early stages. Now, we went back in 2013 to do one of these things, and they found something on my wife's kidney. And they said, hey, you should get an MRI, get that checked out. Now, we're going to skip over the part where my wife took the report and just kind of put it on the shelf and never got the MRI. Let's just skip that part, because they caught it and she was supposed to get an MRI, and that would have maybe changed his scenario a little bit. But we went back here in 2022 and got another same type of scan. And the doctor's like, hey, did you ever get that MRI back in 2013? And my wife said, maybe not. Maybe not. So what had happened is this thing had grown on her kidney. And it had grown to a part where, the doctor was very uncomfortable with how large it had become. And they had to, do a bunch of other tests. Long story short, kidney popped it out. Now, I think that means she loses like a pound, which is going to be, she's going to be very excited about that today. But they had to remove her kidney. Now, this is someone in her mid-40s, right? I don't know if I feel comfortable saying that, but she'll yell at me later and we'll edit this out of the YouTube. I'm 47 years old. She's a couple years younger than me. She's way better health than I am. And this is something that they would not have caught for years and years and years. We don't know yet what the results are as far as the testing goes on this, but it could be something that is cancerous, could be malignant. We don't know yet. The odds are probably that it is. And, you look at this and you say, this could have been 10 years before she even felt anything from it. At that point, it could have spread. I want to show you this from the American Cancer Society. This is kidney cancer survival rates. If it's localized and you're just in your kidney, 93% five-year survival rate. Regional, it had come out and spread a little bit, 72%. But as it spreads, your survival rate gets down to 15% over a five-year period. That's how serious this could be. And the amazing thing is they caught it, and it's been now localized to this one area. And she doesn't have to deal with any of that now. We hope and pray. Of course, you never know. But the bottom line is she was able to improve her situation dramatically because of the fact they caught this early. And, it's like when you think of like big screen TVs, right? They come out, all the evil rich people pay for them for a while, and everyone complains about how they don't have a big screen TV. And those evil rich people do. And then the prices start coming down, and now you're going into Walmart and you're spending like $200 for a 9,000 foot TV. That's how this goes. This process would be something that would be great for us to focus on, getting in the hands of more people. The idea that you go and get these scans so these things get caught beforehand and you don't have to be someone who is going to prioritize this and need to pay a good chunk of money to do it. The fact that we could get something like this affordable to more people would be a massive improvement. And, this is not a pitch that the government should be paying for it. They shouldn't. This is not a pitch that this is going to be something that we, try to push through government spending and all that other crap. It's just a pitch to let the actual forces of capitalism and forces of the market to be able to expand this to target more people. A lot of people are investing in all sorts of different crap. These billionaires are doing all sorts of things. Making this sort of technology come down in price could do massive amounts of good for so many people. Why are we waiting to feel all sorts of terrible pain before we get scans that can catch this stuff when we can still do something about it? All this stuff is available. Capitalism has brought it to us in a modern miracle, a miracle. That we can do these things. We can look inside the body. We don't have to guess anymore. These things are all available. It's just a matter of getting them to a point where they can be affordable for more and more people. I really do think that this is the future of healthcare. I can't say enough about Princeton Longevity Center for finding this and the doctors here in Texas that treated my wife. None of them stepped up to do anything for Miles. If we need our dog to get to 40 years old, where's the science for that? Not quite here yet. He got to 18. That was pretty damn good. But I will say, as we go forward, this is something that we should be, I know we're all spending, we want AI to be able to, plan our parties and write our kids' homework. That's all important. But maybe a focus on something like this with technology that already exists to get this in the hands of more people that can actually be treated for these things earlier on so it's not such a terrible, terrible thing. It's not cheap, but I do think America can get there. And I'm not a hater on the American healthcare system. I love it. It's still the best in the world. We got our problems, as we've seen over the past couple of years. They do exist. But I don't want to go back to ancient Chinese medicine. I want modern, cool stuff. It does exist, and we can actually use it to do really good things, like for my wife. So she has to deal with me for several more years than she probably wants to. Back in a second. So you might remember we've been talking about liver health formula for a while. It's something that can help rejuvenate your liver, reignite your metabolism, burn fat, boost energy, fight fatty liver. And that affects like 100 million Americans. I mean, fatty everything affects Americans. So, well, the good folks over at, that are focusing on liver health have put together a short presentation that shares four warning signs of a damaged or fatty liver. This has nothing to do with my wife's kidney situation, but I mean, you know, you do think about this stuff as you go through that, where you're like, maybe I should take more steps to make my health a little bit better. You can watch a free presentation and learn more about whether this is right for you and maybe you want to do something to help improve your health. Right now, you can head over to checkyourliver.com/stew. Again, it's checkyourliver.com/stew. Checkyourliver.com/stew.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Everything is racist. Every thought you have is a KKK dream. Everything is racist.
Well, in a truly psychotic article from CNN, we learn about a new thing that is racist. Digital blackface. What is it? And why is it wrong when white people use it? Because if you can identify one race of people who's wrong, then you're really solving racism. That's how this new thing works. The article is insane. They say, what is digital blackface? They say, basically, it's like when you have a meme or a GIF of someone who's black reacting in a way that you seem that you think is funny or expressive, and you're a white person that shares that, you're engaging in digital blackface. They say that, it's unbelievable. They say that digital blackface is wrong because it is a form of modern day repackaging of minstrel shows. A racist form of entertainment popular in the 19th century. That's when white actors' faces darkened with burnt cork entertained audiences by playing black characters as bumbling, happy-go-lucky simpletons. Put simply, digital blackface is 21st century minstrelsy. Bet you didn't know that. One truly troubled person named Elizabeth Halford wrote an essay in 2020 apologizing for sharing GIFs of black people. Now, I want to make sure we'll get to what this means on the other side here in a second. But she shared something of Beyonce saying, I'm not bossy, I'm the boss, and then said, I've engaged in digital blackface. She says, I guess we find it funny the way black people tell the story with so much flair. But at the end of the day, she shared a picture of a woman's apartment building burning down, and that made her sad that she shared that for laughs. And that's got nothing to do with race. Maybe just don't. Would it be okay if you shared a white person's building burning down? Would there be? And she has an answer to that, believe it or not. And tell me if you think it's a racist answer of it. She says, those are the most effective, meaning black people, because white people are so boring. That's not racist. Everything else is racist, but calling white people as a race boring, not racist. This is truly psychotic. If you are in your head this much, you need to get out of your head. You need to move to the real world where real things happen. And I love how the answer to this is, white people should only share GIFs and funny imagery about white people. They shouldn't look and find entertainment in other races. They should stick to their own race because that's going to solve racism. White people only sharing material from white people. That's what solves racism in this world where everything is racist.
Everything is racist. Every thought you have is a KKK dream. Everything is racist. White supremacist extreme.
I'm joined now by Ezra Levant. He's the founder and rebel of Rebel News and host of the Ezra Levant Show on the Rebel News channel, which is a good name you came up with there. It's on his YouTube channel. Make sure to head over there and subscribe. Ezra, how's it going?
It's great. It's great to be down here at Blaze Studios. I mean, you guys really set the standard. And I feel like I'm a fan. So I got to keep my fanboy nature in check when I see you and the other talent here.
Well, you guys do great work at Rebel News as well. And it's kind of like, let's start here, because you have some really interesting details about what has gone on over the past couple of years in Canada. But let me just start by the 50,000 foot view here, which is like, as an American, like, you know, American, a lifelong Toronto Blue Jays fan, as an American, I look at Canada like, you guys are our brothers. Like, maybe we disagree on things here and there, but we share a lot of the fundamental sensibilities. Lately, though, I don't feel like I can say that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, really, I can't think of two countries that are more similar. We have the world's longest undefended border. We were shoulder to shoulder with you in World War I, World War II, Korea. I think that so many people cross the Canada-U.S. border and don't even think that they're doing something international.
Yeah.
Culturally, we watch the same TV shows. We listen to the same music. We have a few small differences. We say aboot the hoose.
Of course.
But, I mean, you've got accents across America, too. Mm-hmm. I think there really are no closer nations than Canada and the United States. But imagine if Gavin Newsom became president of the United States. And imagine if there were no term limits and he just stuck around. What would happen to America over time? That's what's happened to Canada with Justin Trudeau, who has been reelected several times and may well be reelected this year. And so over time, every institution becomes a little bit more radicalized, a little bit more wokeified, and certain checks and balances that you have in the United States, we don't have in Canada. And we saw that laid bare during the pandemic. At least in America, you had some courts stand up for freedom. Mm-hmm. You had some governors. You had, you know, some of the Republicans. You had a spectrum of responses.
Sure.
There was some pushback. It was not a total uniformity of viewpoint. In Canada, none of that happened. You know, there's the federal parliament. Every party in there agreed. We have 10 provinces and 3 territories. Every premier and every opposition party agreed. Every media agreed. Every law society agreed. Every law professor, every cultural institution. No one was on the other side. And the odd doctor who dared speak out, he had his license suspended by the College of Physicians and Surgeons. And so that doesn't happen over time. The lockdowns and the pandemic laid that bare. But that took years to get ready for. Let me give you an example of how extreme it was.
Sure, yeah.
Quebec, which is the second largest province, the French-speaking province, wonderful place. They put their province under a curfew from 10 p.m. till 5 a.m. In fact, you couldn't even go out to walk your dog. How's that a health measure? And this curfew was not just for the unvaccinated. It was for vaxxed or not, healthy or sick. That's what you do in a prison. You have a lockdown. That's where the word lockdown came from, prisons. We had a no-fly list domestically. So if you were unjabbed, as I and millions of other Canadians, for whatever reason, we were religious or medical, or we didn't think we were at risk, if you chose not to get vaxxed, in the second largest country in the world, you were not allowed to board a plane or a train. You had to drive across the second longest country in the world. And the prime minister himself saw that he could use fear to whip up anger against the unvaxxed, because he knew that if someone was unvaxxed, most likely they weren't going to vote for him. Mm-hmm. So he didn't care about
the voters. Yeah.
And he demonized them. He had a campaign in the middle of an election campaign in the middle of the lockdowns. And he said, should we even tolerate them? Should we even tolerate them? They're misogynist and extremist. What did that have to do with anything?
Right.
He just played the message track of the left. And I'm embarrassed to say that he was reelected. And so he's learned the lesson that he can get away with it. Mm. And that although some people wake up to it, some people, I mean, I just came from Toronto. People are still, not everybody, there are masks.
Sure.
People are wearing masks. Some people found meaning in the pandemic. Some people loved strict rules. They felt secure in the strict rules. Just like some prisoners who serve a lot of time in prison don't actually know how to survive in freedom. They actually thrived in jail.
Right.
There are some people who love the pandemic.
Can you put put Trudeau in perspective in Canadian history?
Yeah.
Because like I think we look at, you know, Canadian leadership has always been a little more liberal maybe than what we would expect.
Yeah.
Is he exceptional for Canada?
Well,
I mean, exceptionally bad.
His father was prime minister too for 16 years. Again, that's what happens when you don't have term limits.
Yeah.
And his father, by some measures, was a Marxist. I don't think he would have denied that. Mm. You might recall that Pierre Trudeau had a true friendship with Castro. He would go to Cuba all the time. In fact, there's rumors, I don't think they've been proven or disproven, that Justin Trudeau, because of course, Pierre Trudeau's wife, Margaret, was about 30 years younger than him. Mm. So she was a young, beautiful woman. And you can see all the photos in the late 60s and 70s. Yeah. They were very handsy with each other. And I mean, if you compare pictures of young Castro and young Justin Trudeau, it's eerily similar.
There's something there for at least a fun conspiracy theory, at the very least.
But I haven't seen it proven or disproven.
Right, I haven't either.
But here's what we do know. Mm-hmm. Justin Trudeau looks to Fidel Castro as a father figure, if not actually a father.
Which is more important, frankly.
And but in an unscripted, he had a little town hall, Justin Trudeau, when he was running for office. In an unscripted question, he was asked, what country other than Canada do you most admire? Well, that's a good question. I would think of some interesting answers myself. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Without missing a beat, he said, China. Okay. Now, that's an okay answer. I like Chinese food, Chinese people, Chinese language, Chinese history, Chinese culture. There's a lot of things to like about China. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing not to like about China, and that's its communist dictatorship. But in his next breath, he said, because of its basic dictatorship, and then he went on to expand, they can move without the hassle of hearings and
consultations.
So he said China, and that's not necessarily a bad answer if he were to say, I love the Chinese people and the history, and I hope they become free, and they can really participate. And like
sure.
He could have said something good, but the one thing he mentioned was the odious thing about that country. And he continued down that line. His father, Pierre Trudeau, took the boys to Siberia, to the Soviet Union during the Cold War, and said, this is the future, lads. Justin Trudeau has a brother, Alexandra, who has made a documentary film about Iran, published by whom? By the Iranian government.
Wow.
He wrote a book about China, a lot of people do, I have. Mm-hmm. Published by whom? Published by the Chinese government.
I'd assume your book was not published.
No, it was not. And like there's thousands of publishers. You can self-publish. Why would you have the Chinese government edit your book and pay for your book? Mm. And Alexander Trudeau was Justin Trudeau's policy advisor when he ran for the leadership of the Liberal Party. There's a big scandal in Canada over the past couple of weeks because the Trudeaus have something called the Trudeau Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexandra's is on the board. Pierre Trudeau's illegitimate child has an illegitimate daughter. She's on the board. It's like a family slush fund.
Sure.
The Chinese government donated hundreds of thousands of dollars. The Chinese government donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the family foundation. It really is reminiscent of the Clinton Foundation. And there was a bit of a scandal because the Chinese weren't just donating to the Trudeaus. They were manipulating party primaries. Who would become the candidate for the Liberal Party to run for parliament? There's a lot of Chinese Canadians, but many of them love freedom. They came to Canada to get away from communism. There's a big Hong Kong tradition in Canada. So there were Chinese Canadians in parliament who were for freedom. Those districts were targeted by the People's Republic of China. And they ran Chinese Canadians who were pro-Beijing, and they instructed Chinese exchange students and others to get involved and to campaign for the pro-Beijing candidates. And so the freedom-oriented, democracy-oriented Chinese Canadians who were MPs, even who were in the Liberal Party, were expunged by China in Canada. Trudeau was given a briefing about this by our version of the CIA called CSIS. Mm. They actually felt they had to intervene because a Liberal Party candidate named Han Dong, that's his name, was a Chinese asset. And this, and the, our CIA, the CSIS, went to Trudeau and said, you've got to disallow this candidate. Trudeau waved them off. Of course he wants them. It's the country he most admires. It's the country sending hundreds of thousands of dollars to his family slush fund. And to this day, Trudeau says, I will not allow an investigation into it. That is Canada. So there's, let me throw one more thing about Trudeau. Mm-hmm. Trudeau's not quite like Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden has no control of his impulses, drugs, prostitutes, etc. But you can imagine that China had the contents of that laptop long before the New York Post did.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't even need the laptop because they had direct, like you can imagine all the honeypots. Like Hunter Biden is a walking extortion jackpot.
Yes, he really is.
He really is.
The perfect target.
And don't think that doesn't affect Joe Biden, who may be implicated too. I don't have evidence of that, but Hunter Biden is a disaster. Mm. Justin Trudeau is not as dissolute as Hunter Biden, but Justin Trudeau has a history. And whether it's something as goofy as dressing up in blackface, which he did up until middle age, or sexual harassment. He sexually assaulted a woman named Rose Knight in Creston, BC. He later sloughed it off saying, oh, she experienced it differently. But I can only imagine what China knows about him because our own media didn't vet the guy. See, one of the reasons you vet candidates is you want to know their strengths and weaknesses and their policies. But is there a ticking time bomb in a guy?
Something you don't see coming. Yeah.
Like, I mean, the Democrat ran against DeSantis, Gillum. We learned things after the election about dodging a bullet there.
Yeah.
I think Justin Trudeau is vulnerable from an international security point of view, and that may explain some of his foreign policy decisions. But in any event, his domestic policy is what really concerns me. He has followed Fidel Castro, the Soviets, the Chinese, the people who he publicly says he admires. If he says he admires them, we should believe him when he says he admires them. When Pierre Trudeau died, the only world leaders who attended the funeral, if I recall, one was Jimmy Carter and the other was Fidel Castro. Those were the only world leaders that came when Pierre Trudeau died. There was a closeness there. And Justin Trudeau looks up to that tough, tyrant, authoritarian. And over time, Pierre Trudeau, 16 years as prime minister. Justin Trudeau now 8 years as prime minister. That's a quarter of a century of Trudeau's running Canada. That can corrode even a free people over time.
Let's take a quick break. And then on the other side, I want to talk about how he's using the powers and sort of starting to implement these powers in Canada to crack down on all sorts of different groups. We're talking to Ezra Levant. We'll be back in just a second.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
We're back with Ezra Levant of Rebel News. So we were talking about the sort of affinity that Justin Trudeau seems to feel with a lot of these foreign dictators, has relationships with them. It seemed to me COVID gave him the excuse to kind of do a little fantasy league, like a dictator fantasy league up in Canada.
Yeah.
We saw it with the Canadian truckers at first. We're seeing it with the churches and religion, anyone who speaks out against COVID stuff. Can you kind of bring us back? Let's start with the trucking situation. Yeah. I that was an inexplicable response from a government over people who just felt they should have their rights honored.
Yeah. You know, there was no institutional pushback to Trudeau's authoritarianism during the lockdown. There just wasn't. The opposition parties, the media. In Canada, almost every single media company relies on government funding. Obviously, the largest media in the country, called the CBC, is our state broadcaster. It's owned by Trudeau. It's larger than all the private media combined. But every private media takes a bailout from Trudeau. So they magnified his voice. So who opposed? An authentic, organic group of truckers. Truckers are very independent-minded. Most of them, you know, are alone by themselves. They own their own rig, maybe their contract. Some work for a company, but a lot of truckers, very independent-minded. So it's amazing, these truckers, and it's such a visual thing. 100 trucks driving on a highway. People literally come out, they want to watch it. People lined overpasses. And it was a revelation that they had been lied to. They had a false consciousness that everyone supported the lockdowns, everyone supported vaccine mandates. Mm. And thousands of trucks, and I would estimate close to 1 million people along the way, maybe 100,000, but probably multiples of that,
yeah,
visually, physically, personally saw this manifestation. No, we don't all agree. And so it woke up the country that had been hypnotized. No, no, you're the crazy one for not liking this. Because look at this 30 miles of truck coming. Mm-hmm. When they got to Ottawa, what crime did they commit? Did they storm the parliament? No, they did not. Did they have any weapons on them? No, we're Canadian. We're not that armed.
Yeah.
Were there any violent crimes whatsoever? No. In fact, crime in downtown Ottawa fell during the truckers. So what law did they break? Well, they broke some parking fine. They broke some, sure, parking laws. And they were honking their horns, and that kept some of the neighbors awake. So they went to court to get an injunction to have the honking stopped, and they obeyed. Mm-hmm. They committed no crime. And yet Trudeau was so embarrassed by them that he deployed riot cops. He invoked martial law. And again, the reaction, even by civil liberties groups, was to egg him on more, go harder, crush them. All the so-called liberal voices, the civil liberties voices, were either silent or wanted harsher responses. Seizing bank accounts of political opponents, that's Venezuela stuff. That's Castro stuff.
Yeah.
And yet he feels vindicated. He doesn't feel embarrassed by it. The media party, as I call it, totally supports him. I'm worried about Canada because these things didn't happen overnight. I blame the Trudeaus in part, of course I do, but that's a lot of institutions failing all at once.
Is there hope for a society that doesn't react at all to something like this? I mean,
there's got to be hope, and you've got to keep hope alive, and you've got to keep working as if there's hope. But the thing is, this problem happened over 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to take 20 or 30 years to get back on course. Trouble is, a lot of the woke craziness from campuses, well, it's now in lawyers and now judges. So, you know, the long march through the institutions continues in Canada. I am worried about things. Canada is just about 5 years further down that road than America. So I tell my American friends, hold on to your freedoms. We are a cautionary tale. Look at us as a bad example. And hold on to what you have, because I wish that I could go back in time and say to Canadians 5-10 years ago, watch out, beware of what's coming. I can't do that because I don't have a time machine, but I can come here from the future, from America's future, and say, I come from your future to warn you. If you do not be careful, you will be Canadianized. And that's not a compliment.
Mm. You know, I think one of the most fascinating parts about watching everything, particularly in the COVID era, of watching the strange things that occurred, maybe the most surprising part of it was the attacks on faith.
Yeah.
We saw that here where, you know, we have a clear First Amendment that protects religious liberty,
yeah,
and a longstanding tradition of it. And still states try to, shut down successfully in some cases, yeah, shut down services, not even in the first weeks where I still think it was completely unconstitutional to do so, but also months and months and in some cases into a year after the pandemic started. And honestly, like, I look at what happened here and it was shocking to me. I'm surprised we have not seen more action even in the courts to stop this stuff. In Canada, it was considerably worse. I mean, what's going on now with multiple doctors, yeah, in Canada? Can you walk us through? Because I know you've been working with these,
sure,
pastors, on their legal defense. This is really important work.
Yeah. A lot of pastors were jailed in Canada for not closing their churches. More pastors were jailed in Canada for not closing their churches in the pandemic than were jailed in China. For the same reason. That is a fact. In fact, there were some Christian pastors who were jailed, one of them, Arthur Pavlovsky's, for 50 days. And today, I just got an update from the court back in Calgary, Canada, that there's a Christian pastor, so we're out of the lockdowns now.
Yeah.
This pastor was charged because he was feeding the homeless during the lockdowns. They charged him with an illegal gathering for feeding the homeless on the street.
Incredible.
Now they've charged him again because 5 days ago he went to a drag queen story hour at a public library and sort of heckled them. They arrested him, threw him in jail.
Is there a heckling crime in Canada?
It is not. Now, okay, you could say causing a disturbance, but
sure,
you don't jail someone for that. In Canada, we give bail to accused terrorists. And this accused pastor, this morning, was told he must remain in prison for another 8 days, a grand total of 13 days, for heckling a drag queen story hour, not for any physical violence. In fact, he had violence done to him. And there's silence, even from the mainstream church leaders, silence from the civil liberties groups, silence from other politicians. I don't know what's going on. There is a rising anti-Christian bigotry. Justin Trudeau whipped up some of that. He said that the churches were to blame for violating the rights of the indigenous people. There was a string of arson and vandalism. About 50 churches were targeted, and Trudeau didn't say a word about it. And Trudeau's right-hand man, Gerald Butt, said, well, it's understandable. Can you imagine? And we don't know who that was, because the police haven't investigated with any effort. Was that Antifa? Was that who's torching churches in Canada, burning them down, vandalizing them, desecrating them? And why doesn't anyone care? I say again, if those were synagogues or mosques, there would be a lot of attention to it. I think that the marginalization of Christians in Canada is a scandal. It's not as bad, obviously, as in Syria, Iraq, China. Sure. But I think that the treatment of Christians in Canada should be put on a human rights watch list. And I would ask Americans, because you care about freedom around the world. I know that congressmen and senators and committees study religious freedom around the world. It's one of my favorite things about America. You care about the world. Give a care for Canada. Put us on your list. We're not the worst problem. We're not as bad as North Korea. But we are a problem, and we could use some kind words, because Canadians are always saying, an American paid attention to us. Mm. Canada was mentioned in the New York Times. Like, there's a little bit of an inferiority complex in our country, because we're like the mouse next to the elephant. Sure. So when the elephant notices us, we're excited. I would ask my American friends to mention Canada, think of Canada, because we're in trouble and we could use some help.
Can you walk people through if they can help out your organization and what you're doing and how they can get involved?
Thank you. I mean, I run Rebel News, which is a news company, and you can check us out at rebelnews.com.
And you cover a lot of these stories there.
But sometimes we get involved to actually help. So this Christian pastor who's in jail today, his name is Derek Reimer, and we've set up a website called SavePastorDerek.com. And that's a crowdfunding site that pays his lawyers. And actually, if you're Canadian, you'll get a charitable tax receipt for it. So if you want to help this Christian pastor, go to SavePastorDerek.com. He was in court this morning. We'll be there for him in court in 8 days. And I'm worried this is going to be a big battle. They want to throw some hate crimes charges at him. Hate crimes charges, because a Christian pastor is against a drag queen story hour. They want to charge him with hate crimes. This is going to be a bigger battle.
It's SavePastorDerek.com. Yeah. Make sure to check it out. It's Ezra Levant from Rebel News. Thank you so much for doing this. Make sure to check out the Ezra Levant Show and head over to Rebel News and the YouTube page to subscribe. Ezra, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the big problems, an interesting thing over the past few days of not really sitting down and following the news like I normally do and reading, you know, tons and tons of stories about every big news issue, is you kind of get the regular person feel of the news. You know, like, you're here watching The Blaze, you're very engaged in the news, you're following this stuff all the time. Not everyone's like you. I keep reminding people of this. People aren't like you, they're not as informed as you are. It's hard to move people because a lot of people don't pay attention. So I'm kind of like, you know, dealing, you know, in between doctors coming into the hospital room. I'm reading the news, I'm scrolling through it, and I see this terrible Nashville shooting. And early on, it seems like a woman did it, and it was very confusing. Usually these things are not women. Then it seems like there might have been a transgendered person involved in it. And I can't tell you how difficult it was to actually suss out what happened. Because no one will say anything that's real. They refer to people with different pronouns. They use the word they. I can't tell if it was a group of people. It doesn't make any sense. And it took me until I got to conservative media eventually, who eventually explained, okay, it was someone who was born a woman and was identifying a man as a man, apparently. Well, you know, the transgender thing is always a big story. Arizona's governor's press secretary resigned after tweeting a meme about threatening to shoot transphobes. Now, here's the actual meme. And it's just, you know, it's a woman standing with two guns, and it says, us when we see transphobes. Basically saying, like, We don't like transphobic people. Now, does anyone actually think she's going to go out and shoot transphobic people? No. She had to resign over this because of all the controversy. The one thing that's interesting to me, though, is this is the Christina Pershaw effect. If you don't know who she is, she's Ron DeSantis's press, or was Ron DeSantis's press secretary. I think she works for the campaign now. But she's just really good at Twitter, and she's very good at slapping down people and arguing with them. And now everybody wants to be her. And you're going to see a lot of big mistakes because she's really good at it. She walks the line really well. Not everybody can do that, as we saw in Arizona. So RIP the career of this person. We will see you tomorrow. Thanks for all your support. Appreciate it.